It's always a fun and informative program when folks from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection join us. But I have to say, I especially enjoy hearing from them about the previous year's list of top 10 consumer complaints, and that's what we're going to do today. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Glad you could join us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Good to see you, Sandy.
Good morning, Judith.
That is not a title that you can whip out in 2 seconds.
But it all fits on my business card,
wow.
Believe it or not.
And that's not an 8.5 by 11 business card. And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Thanks for coming by, Michelle.
Thanks for having us, Judith.
Well, it is always a lot of fun to find out, what's changed on the list, if there are any new things. How do you compile this list of top consumer complaints, Sandy? Where does the data come from?
Every contact and formal complaint we receive is entered into a database, and we just compile the information at the year end and come up with these top 10 complaints.
And how many complaints were filed in 2013?
It was between 10 and 11,000,
wow.
And that's typically where we end up. Our complaints were up 4% over the previous year, so that gives you an indication of what's going on out there.
Yeah, and you also made the point, as we were getting ready for the show, that these are the top 10 consumer complaints, but the numbers are actual complaints. So it depends a little bit what kind of spurs people to actually let the department know.
Right. And it takes some effort for a consumer to file a written complaint with us. You know, we ask for quite a bit of information, but it's really important that people do that because it allows us to connect dots and see patterns throughout the state. We often work with the Federal Trade Commission or FBI or Secret Service on cases, and what we hear here makes a difference to what they're doing. But a lot of times people think, well, you know, what difference does it make if I got a call from Microsoft tech support? But it really does help us, first of all, go after the people that are attempting to commit fraud in the state. But second of all, it allows us to get the word out to consumers about what's going on in the marketplace and what they need to know to help protect themselves from fraud.
Right. And so it's both an issue of being able to alert people and also that you have the tools you need to actually hold those scammers accountable.
Right. To conduct an investigation and go to court if necessary to get people their money back.
Right. Well, we will welcome calls from our listeners about potential scams that they've encountered or questions that they may have. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Well, Michelle, if we were mean, we'd start at the bottom of the list and build excitement and make people wait for number one. But let's be nice and let's start at number one instead. Probably not a big surprise to any of us that number one on the list is telemarketing and especially violations of the no-call list. Are there any that really stand out that were egregious this past year?
Well, you've heard us talk about these, I think, on past shows every time we're here. Sandy already mentioned one of the most notable, the Microsoft tech support scam. Consumers get quite a few calls saying something's wrong with their computer. Let us have access. We'll fix that virus that you've gotten. And they often asked that you turn over the computer, give them access to it via remote, you know, through the Wi-Fi. And then while they're there, they're loading malware that will then read your keystrokes and put viruses on your computer so they can get your personal information. They may even rummage through your files and get information that way. So you have to be very careful. This is a scam. Microsoft doesn't place phone calls saying, hey, something's wrong with your computer.
Right.
So
right. And just so people know, if they call Microsoft or another provider, that's a whole different situation. I mean, as long as you're calling the right number, but if it's an outside person coming to you, that's a red flag.
When you need the service and you reach out, that's different than when all of a sudden someone calls you and says, oh, by the way, this is wrong. You should deal with it. So always be on alert that way for any type of scam. We have the medical alert scams where people were calling saying, hey, we have this device we can send to you for very cheap or free, and then there ends up being a monthly charge. Consumers, they made it sound like a live call by having recorded sounds in the background and things, and it was another type of robocall. And consumers would pay a small fee, hand over their credit card, all of a sudden this monthly bill, never get the product. So that was a very popular scam that we saw targeting seniors again that way. So to be on alert that way. And the same other name was the senior assistance type scams for medical devices, equipment, and things. It runs the same way.
And with, I mean, there are obviously phone scams, but there are also just people that are violating the no-call list. They might be a legitimate business, but they're violating the no-call list. What does it take to actually hold a business accountable if they're doing that regularly?
Well, we need to receive a written complaint. We need to know what happened. What's your phone number? When did you get the call? Who'd you get the call from? We go back, look at our records, see if that telemarketer is registered. If they're not registered to telemarket, that's one issue. If they are registered to telemarket, why are they calling people on the no-call list? That's another issue. So we dig in on those and talk to the company, have meetings, and take enforcement action from there.
I think I saw an article recently that I can't remember which state legislator, but someone was actually considering proposing that political calls could be, that people on the no-call list could actually be not getting political calls too. It's hard to believe that'll get any traction.
Well, but you never know. The state law right now addresses calls that are made for the purpose of selling property, goods, or services. And you think about it, that excludes things like political calls, marketing surveys, calls from charities. So this bill would require that anyone, any organization that makes robocalls be registered with us and be prohibited then from calling numbers on the no-call list. So the bill has had a couple of hearings now in committee, and we'll see what happens.
And I'm guessing that if people feel strongly about that, contacting their own state legislators would not be a bad idea.
That's always your option as a citizen.
Yeah, yeah. And also, did I hear that there's a possibility that the no-call list could be made permanent as well?
That bill has already passed, and is the next step in the process now is for the governor to sign the bill.
Has he given indications of how he's coming down on that?
We haven't discussed it with anyone in the governor's office, but it pass both houses without a vote against. So that gives you some indication of where it may head.
And so that would mean right now it's every 2 years, correct?
Right.
That people have to renew being on the no-call list. So this would be once a particular phone number is on there, it's just on there forever.
You sign up once, and as long as you have that number, you're covered by the no-call protections.
Now, that's interesting because there are times, I don't think it happens as much as it used to, but sometimes people have a different phone number, then they would obviously have to re-register or register the new phone number. But would a person who randomly got assigned that old phone number, they would already be on the no-call list?
The list, kind of behind the scenes, the way things would work under this bill is that we would be using the federal do not call list. And that list is scrubbed on a regular basis to keep that specific thing from happening.
So whenever you would get a new phone number, if you want to be on the no-call list, you should make sure that that one is registered.
Right.
Great. Well, we are talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And we're talking about consumer complaints and scams and fraud and what you can do to protect yourself and how you can help others avoid potential scams. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page. And on the Facebook page, you will find a link to photos of Larry in Hawaii with a wonderful group of WPR listeners. And even if we're still in kind of gray, wintry weather here, we can all vicariously enjoy that trip to Hawaii. And we'll be posting photos as Larry sends them up on, it's actually on WPR.org, but we'll let people know on Facebook how to get there. Well, number two was landlord and tenant issues. No. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Michelle, what kind of things fall under that?
One of the most common scenarios that we see complaints about for landlord-tenant issue is the security deposit, whether it be what was deducted from a security deposit and disagreements over that, or whether it be the timing of receiving that and the type of notice that's given about those deductions. The law clearly states when a security deposit needs to be returned, and so some consumers are complaining that they haven't gotten one at all or that it came late. And then others are, again, those disagreements over whether or not certain things needed cleaning had right. beyond normal wear and tear and then had a deduction. And sometimes it's just the amount that was deducted. They're not really arguing about whether or not the deduction right. should happen. It's just
but
the amount.
But they thought it should be $50 and the landlord said, no, it costs $300 to fix.
Exactly. Landlords can take in from the security deposit for things beyond normal wear and tear. That's what it's there for. They can take for unpaid rent. That's it's there right. to protect the property and the condition of the property when the tenant comes in. Tenants then have rights as well as far as what those deductions can be. Another issue that we hear about is unauthorized entry. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in the moment. It's not after your lease is over like a security deposit. That's when you're living there. And so that communication between a landlord and a tenant while they're living there and that relationship and how it's going, a landlord needs to give 12 hours notice in order to enter the property. And he, she has the right to do that. That's their investment and they have a right to do an inspection and check on something. They can enter the property on shorter notice if there's a concern for emergency. Right. I mean, if there's a fire, smoke coming out, pipes bursting
down and,
right
yeah.
now with this winter, and they have that ability to go in. They need to knock on the door, declare who they are upon that entry both times, and let them know why they're there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, that 12 hours notice is to do these random inspections and just go through and take a look at their investment.
And going back to something you said, Michelle, the issue of security deposits being returned in a timely manner, what is the requirement?
It's 21 days from the time that the tenant's lease is over. The law changed over the last year and a half, 2 years. It used to be 21 days from the time that the tenant vacated the property. It's changed to when that lease is done or when the landlord has re-rented the property if a tenant cuts their lease short. And that, again, is because a landlord has the right to deduct for unpaid rent. And so if your lease is continuing, that next month's rent doesn't come till 30, 31 days. So a landlord can see if that rent's paid and if they need to withhold the security deposit for that reason.
Great. Let's go to the phones. And actually, going back to the no-call list topic, Bill in Appleton had a question. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I know that businesses that I've already done business with or charitable organizations are exempt from the do not call list. But my question is, if a charitable organization or a business I've done business with calls me and I request, please do not put me on, or please put me on your do not call list, are they obligated to honor that request?
Sandy?
I'm just trying to think how federal law might cover that situation. Do you want to talk about that, Michelle?
Well, if you want to make that request, you should always do it in writing and make sure that you put it in writing to them. So then you have documentation as well that you've made this request. But if you've asked a business to put you on their internal do not call list, they need to do that and honor that. Again, that charity piece, that because they're exempt from the no-call list, we'd have to look at where that provision is in the law, if it's under the exemption section or not.
So it may actually fall more under good relations with donors or past supporters
Correct.
Than under a legal situation. But certainly, I would think, Sandy, that Bill is right, that he should be making very clear to the person calling, I do not want to be called.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And Bill, also, because depending on how large the charity is, they may be using an outside calling firm. He may actually want to contact the charity itself, not necessarily rely on that telemarketer to pass the information.
And remember that some of these so-called charities hire fundraisers that can be extremely aggressive. And especially I'm thinking of these pseudo veterans organizations, you know, that use the word veterans in their name because, you know,
right.
people will give to that. So What I'm getting at is that people should be very cautious in giving in response to telephone solicitations.
Right.
Make sure you ask lots of questions about where will my money go, how much of my donation will be used for the purpose I'm giving it for, and how much will be used for fundraising or overhead.
Thanks for that call, Bill. We are talking about the top consumer complaints of 2013 with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection for Wisconsin. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today, will be happy to take those questions. Right now, we're talking with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers about the top consumer complaints of 2013. And Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois, has a question about something that was a big topic in 2013. Let's go there. Hi, Nelson.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, just fine.
Okay. My question was about the Target thing that happened a couple of months ago, and it makes me very frightened, and I'm sure a lot of other people, that somebody can somehow get into your debit account and just drain your bank account. Now, I'm wondering if it is better for our whole country if people paid with cash instead of trying to do all this monkeying around.
All right. So a couple questions, I think, there. Are there so many inherent risks in using credit and debit cards that I'm not sure if it's really possible to move away from them at this point in our society?
Well, a couple of things. We've talked about the kind of antiquated payment system that we have in this country with the magnetic strips on the backs of the credit and debit cards that make us somewhat vulnerable. And Europe, the EU, has gone to a chip embedded in the cards, which is a much stronger system. The other thing is that one of the things that has been prompted by this Target issue is that more and more people are using those prepaid cards for purchasing because it's not tied to your bank account, and there's a finite amount of money on
it. So this is basically a card that you buy, you put money onto it,
right, and it's not tied to your bank account in any way. So that's what people are doing to protect themselves and limit their liability.
Is there more of a fee to use that kind of card, or is it pretty comparable to a more traditional credit or debit card?
Yeah, there are fees, and they tend to be very competitive. You know, there are a number of companies that offer the prepaid cards. But I think it's interesting that this was a real wake-up call for people about how vulnerable they can be. And Target really has done a good job of managing this and limiting the exposure of the consumers have and being fairly quick about replacing cards and doing what they can to clean up the damage. But everybody now, consumers, are saying, well, I don't want that to happen to me. So what can I do to protect myself?
And have there been reports of people where it's clear that they were the victim of fraud or identity theft as a result of that Target breach specifically?
Yeah, there have been numerous reports about that. And again, Target has pledged to cover any damages. And I know that there are a number of lawsuits being filed, for instance, by banks and credit card companies against Target because they've incurred a lot of costs in replacing credit cards and all that. So, you know, there's a lot that still is shaking out here. But for me, the big message is, you know, do what you can to protect yourself.
And certainly those regular credit reports are a good thing to do, even when there's not a big event. Michelle, why don't you refresh our memories about how to get those free credit reports and how often we can and should get them?
Well, under federal law, you're allowed to get a free credit report once a year from each of the major three credit reporting agencies. So we tell consumers to space that out every 4 months because that way you're doing a regular inspection and check. If you can't handle that maintenance, make sure you're at least checking it once a year at a minimum. But you can go to annualcreditreport.com and get an online printout of your credit history, your credit report, and you want to go through that with a fine-tooth comb and verify that all the information is accurate. Your past living addresses, make sure that the extensions of credit that are listed there are yours, the vehicle loans that you may have are yours, and if you see any problems, that you report it back and see if you can get it cleared, what's led to that, and then go about, are you a victim of identity theft? Our Office of Privacy Protection can help you look through how to go about correcting that and recovering from being a victim if that's what's happened. Sometimes there's just some misreporting that's happened, and the credit reporting agencies will clear that up. Other times it says, hey, you're a victim of identity theft, and now you need to dig into that and work on cleaning it up and stopping any damage that's being done.
And I think I remember, Michelle and Sandy, you saying that even if a couple has been married for a long time and they have a lot of things in common, that they really should each be getting their credit reports.
Absolutely. Every person should do it. You should also, you know, look into your child's credit report as well if you have children. And there you don't want a credit report.
Right.
You know, you don't want anything to show up because that means they still have a clean history.
And I remember talking about that in the past, that children's identity information is especially valuable because they have perfect credit so far because they have no history. And it could be years before it came to light that
right.
that information had been used.
They have very clean histories. And now under Wisconsin law, you have the ability to put a freeze on a child's credit report. So what the credit reporting agencies do is create a report and then freeze it. So then no one can harm the child and create identity theft against that individual. So parents want to consider that. There is a small fee for doing that with each of the credit reporting agencies, but you can lock it down for 16, 18 years,
wow.
You know, depending upon longer. It just depends on when that child would need an extension of credit. And at that point, you have to lift it so that it can be given and lock it back down.
I have to say, what, even 5-10 years ago, I don't think that would have ever have occurred to us as something that we had to, you know, take on as parents as a protecting our kids.
Yeah, it's a different form of safety now that needs to be done.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones, and Jim in New London is up next. Hi, Jim. Jim?
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Hey. Okay. Once a person gets upstairs.
Oh, unfortunately, Jim, you're really breaking up. I'm sorry about that. We're not going to be able to take your call. Let's go back to the phones and Lori in New Berlin. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a comment. I've been on the no-call list with my landline since its inception. I renew that annually to make sure that I'm on there, and I have found it to be very ineffective. I mean, the telemarketing, the robocalls, the supposed charity organizations that are not, it's just relentless. It's on a daily basis, and now we're going to be starting with the political robocalls again. I'm so frustrated to the point that this week I finally disconnected my landline because I've had that same number for 30 years, but It's just relentless, and being on the no-call list has not stopped it or slowed it down.
Lori, are you getting multiple calls from the same places, or are they all different places?
Well, it's a lot of the same places. I mean, you know, we read Rachel from Credit Reporting. Now I just got one from Bob from the Credit Reporting. I mean, it's just constant. I've gone online to fill out reports a couple of times, but you ask for your form, online form, is so tedious. It asks for so much information that's not pertinent. I don't have a caller ID, so I can't come up with a phone number. So for me, it's pretty much, you know, useless. And when a couple of years ago when I did fill one out on a report, you said you'd get back to me in 4 to 6 weeks, and nobody ever got back to me.
Okay, well, Lori, let me give Sandy and Michelle a chance to respond. Michelle?
We've heard that about our form. We'll be honest with you. When the no-call program opened, we had that form trying to gather as much information as we can in order to proceed and move forward on our investigation. And so we ask consumers to fill out as much as they have, understanding that some don't have caller ID, because that just helps us be able to move forward in our process sometimes more quickly because we have more inclusive information. Sure. But fill out as much as you can. Any consumer that wants to file a complaint, if you have the name, a phone number, just as much as you can. And if you can't complete it, don't let that stop you from filing the form. And we've heard there's a lot of going on internationally with robocalls and criminals just reaching out to call consumers using auto dialers, robocalls. We're working with our federal partners a couple years ago, Robo Rachel's all we heard. And the FTC was able to crack down on some of that because all the states working together through our federal partners and taking a look at those aspects of that. And again, as much information as we can get from consumers to help with that. But it is hard jurisdictionally to reach out to some of these calls coming from overseas, all sorts of different countries, and in trying to reach out to them. And the legitimate telemarketers who are acting in violations, we can act on. The illegitimate telemarketers reaching out from other countries, we work with our federal partners to minimize it as mm-hmm. best we can.
And Sandy, I'm assuming that you wish that Lori had gotten that call back that she said she was going to get from someone.
Well, yeah, I am concerned about that. I don't know what happened there, but somebody obviously dropped the ball. We do, you know, we receive between 10 and 11,000 formal complaints a year. Our hotline tends to get around 70,000 calls a year, and we have 3.5 people taking those calls. So it's a lot. And from time to time, unfortunately, things drop between the cracks.
All right. Thanks for that call, Lori. We do appreciate hearing from you. And I know Sandy and Michelle appreciate that kind of feedback. I wanted to, you know, having a telephone seems to be one of the biggest risks for being having a complaint as a consumer. Coming in at number three, Michelle, is complaints against telecom companies. What kind of complaints are those?
Well, what we see here is a lot of billing disputes. So where there may be just a disagreement about a charge or a telephone call made, that's a simple one. Where there might be a cancellation or that could have happened, and should there be an early termination fee as a result of that. A billing dispute where there's a cramming. And what that is an additional charge that wasn't authorized on a phone bill. And that can be a very small $1.95, $9.99 that you want to watch for and alert the telecommunications carrier about that. It could just be billing disputes over I signed up under a certain promotion, and that promotion is not what I'm being billed mm-hmm. for, or disagreements when you have a bundled package. So you get your cable provider or your television provider, your internet provider, and your telephone provider all in one. And then as far as what that package should be, a dispute over those terms and conditions mm-hmm. as well. That's what we see a lot of. We do see complaints about service coverage as well. We can't regulate the quality of service, but the representation behind where your coverage should work. Anything during that sales presentation or advertisement presentation, those representations, we would regulate that piece of it, and we get complaints about that as well.
And so it sounds like that there are possibilities for these kind of problems, whether it's a landline or a cell phone contract.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the most common thing that we hear about, again, are billing errors, billing disputes. Somebody ordered something and they're not getting it, or they didn't order something and they're being charged for it.
All right. And identity theft, we touched on with the credit reports and monitoring that, but identity theft was fourth in the rankings for the second straight year. And sad to say, but that one seems like it's here to stay, right, Sandy?
Yeah, and over the last 2 years, it's gone up 71%. So a 71% huge increase. And this is something 5 years ago, you would not have seen at all on the top 10 list. Mm-hmm. So a huge issue for people. I know everybody's concerned about it. Again, going back to the Target data breach, but just a huge issue for people now.
We are talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. They are from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection for the state of Wisconsin. Phones are full right now, but you can email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page, and that is The Larry Mealer Show. And Mealer is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Let's go back to the phones and Caroline in Madison. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
Hey, I have a quick question about what about the firemen and the policemen that call in? Are they exempt? Or, you know, because I like always feel guilty if I don't have the money to give them.
So it sounds like, so you're wondering if the fraternal order of police and things like that, if they're exempt from the no-call list.
Yeah, and how do you know if they're real?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Michelle?
Well, that was exactly the follow-up that you just laid out there. How do you know if they're real? That's the biggest concern. So if, you know, we're, again, the sale of goods or services, that's a regulated call. It's solicitation that you would receive. So charity calls are exempt. And if your local fire department or police department are calling about a charity event or fundraiser, that would be exempt. But if they turn around and try and sell you something, that could be covered. But then how do you know if they're real? Or are they just an organization calling on behalf and it's one of the false or fraudulent? You should really check out who you're giving to. The Department of Financial Institutions regulates charities in the state of Wisconsin. You can go online and see that the charity you want to give to is a registered charity. Check them out before you give. And personally, I always ask them to mail me something. Mm-hmm. Mail it. Let me evaluate it. I can see in writing exactly who my money's going to go to, how they spell it, how they word it. And that way I can check it out to make sure that they are that registered charity.
Yeah, and Caroline put it perfectly. She said she always feels guilty if she does not give, and that's what they're banking on. Mm-hmm. So if you ask them to mail you information or give me a website even, that buys you time to do your research before giving money to. And specifically with the police and firefighters, always ask whether your donation will go to your local department, because usually it does not.
Oh, that's a very good point, Sandy. Thanks for that call, Caroline. And Sandy, number 5 on the top 10 consumer complaints is home improvement. And actually, David in South Milwaukee, I think, has something to add on that. So let's start there. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi.
Purchased a house which has freeze damage, so I'm going to be having to hire some contractors for both repair and restoration. I had a bad experience several decades ago hiring a contractor, did a bunch of work that was not necessary. So I'm calling to find out what the precautions would be before hiring a contractor. Are there good organizations to check with? Do you folks have a brochure? And how does escrow work where one sets aside money before paying?
All right.
We do have a great brochure on home improvement. Go to our website at datcp.wi.gov, and you can download it and read through it. And the most important thing with home improvement, because it typically is a high-dollar investment in your home, take your time and check with your friends and neighbors for companies they've had a good experience with. There are a number of places you can go to on the web to read consumer reviews of different companies. And then once you've narrowed it down to a few companies, get estimates. Once you made your decision, make sure that you have everything in writing, because that really helps resolve disputes down the road.
And it being the fifth on the list, that means you're hearing from a lot of people. I know some of the issues, Michelle, and this time of year, I think we're coming into the season for it, is kind of construction or repair people going door to door saying, oh, I noticed you're, you know, you've got some loose shingles and I can give you a good price on that. What are some of the things that are real red flags for homeowners in that way?
Well, I think we said it earlier in the sense of if you don't need it and you haven't sought it out, you don't answer that phone call and decide that you need it right then and there. Don't answer that doorbell and, oh, yeah, I should do that. Sandy just said it. Take your time. Check it out with estimates, not just the person who happened to knock on the door.
Right.
But then get everything in writing. Understand what it is you'll be receiving as a service and how much you need to pay for it. Even down to the color of the shingle, if that's what you're buying, you know, put that in writing. What the warranty is, get that in writing. And then, you know, paying attention to the payments and the services and if the subcontractors are being paid and that the suppliers are being paid. We see a lot of contractors saying that they'll start on a certain day and the project will end and the day will come and go and maybe some work's been done or no work's been done. And so checking in with your contractor along the way and making sure work is progressing in a timely manner and that communication is occurring during your contracted time period.
And Sandy, you were mentioning that really good home improvement brochure available online. If people don't have access to the internet, is there a phone number that they can call?
Sure, they can call our consumer hotline. It's a toll-free number, 1-800-422-7128, and just request the home improvement brochure.
Great. We are talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen about consumer protection and the top consumer complaints in Wisconsin for 2013. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today. We are talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, and we are working our way through the top 10 consumer complaints of 2013. But we also have several people who want to join the conversation. So for now, let's go back to the phones and Steve in Wausau. Hi, Steve. Hello, Steve. Steve.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, you need to turn your radio down.
Yes, thank you. I just turned it off.
Great.
Just a question on consumer protection and maybe weights and measures and things like that. When someone buys something at a grocery store, are you supposed to expect it's not outdated, or should you look?
I would say, first of all, it's always good to look. But Sandy, what as consumers can we expect?
You know, this is something that we don't regulate, but there are a number of best if used by and expires on this date. It can be really confusing for consumers. But I would recommend if you did buy something that had expired that you mention it to the store management. And then I don't have the number for our Division of Food Safety with me, but you can call our consumer number. And again, that number is 800-422-7128 and ask to be transferred to somebody who works in the food division.
And I have to say it's happened very infrequently, but when I have gotten something home and either I notice the date has passed or I open it and it's obviously, you know, the packaging has been compromised or something, when I've taken it back to the store, even next time I'm at the store, I've said, you know, cut into this melon and it was completely rotten or something. The stores that I have taken things back to have been more than happy to give me a new one, have apologized, wanted to know, because they want to let the people they're buying from know too. So.
Right, exactly. I've had the same experience that my local grocer has said, oh my, you know. And especially if you open it and it's not quite right.
Yeah. had a bad yogurt experience one time that is kind of etched in my memory. But now, Michelle, number six on the list was interesting. It's related to the airline industry. And it seems like a couple of the main things were specific to last year. They weren't just general things. One was a closure of a regional airline.
Yeah, there was a closure of a regional airline in the Green Bay area, MetJet. And so we heard from some consumers that had had received vouchers when they purchased other tickets and things at a discounted rate. And so it's always those complaints when a store closes, and what do I do if I'm left with this, because how do I cash it in? And then we had a number of complaints when Frontier Airlines in Milwaukee had started to minimize a number of flights and offered to transfer frequent flyer miles to Delta, and some of how that transition was occurring, and consumers' points being honored with Delta, and stuff that was going on there with that transfer. So we heard from consumers there and assisted them to get their miles.
Yeah, actually, Sandy, I was going to say that the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection mediation efforts, I see, helped consumers transfer more than 18.7 million miles.
That's correct.
That's a lot of miles.
Yes, it is. And we were able to help hundreds of people through that. And it, you know, it wasn't anything that we had legal authority over, but just stepped in on behalf of consumers and worked with the two airlines to help consumers navigate through the customer service process.
Great. I want to let listeners know, now that we have a couple open lines, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do the top 10 complaints that were running through here ring true for you? Or is there one you're surprised didn't make the cut? Or maybe you had a bad consumer experience in 2013. Did you report it? And was it resolved to your satisfaction? We'd love to have you join in. Let's go to Jim in New London next. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, okay. My question is, once you found out you're being scammed, whether it be on a landline or your cell phone, and you get, thanks to modern technology with the ID number, and once you get that number and find the location, who do you turn that in, that information into, to take care of the, you know, of the scammers, maybe, you know, keep from getting scammed again?
Sure. And certainly that's kind of the underlying thing that we talk about when Sandy and Michelle are on. But Sandy, why don't you, what exactly should people be reporting? I mean, I think sometimes we get a call that doesn't feel quite right, but we don't know if that rises to the level of something to report. What's kind of the threshold for reporting something?
Yeah, you can always call our consumer hotline and let them know what just happened to you. And our hotline operators will let you know whether it's important to us to get something in writing from you that we can use in as the basis for an investigation. But people are not shy about letting us know when they get these telemarketing calls. Believe me, I get them too. Michelle gets them. I know Judith gets them. And it really, truly helps us do our jobs to hear from you. So never hesitate. That's why we're here. If there's nothing we can do because we don't have the legal authority to do it, at the very least, we can get the word out to other consumers and hopefully prevent them from being taken advantage of.
All right. Thanks for that call, Jim. Let's go next to Barb in Hazelhurst. Hi, Barb.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
My question is in regards to propane. Since there's been this propane shortage, I've been calling around to get the best price on propane. And right in the telephone book, it says, we will meet or beat any competitor's price. So when you call up there and ask for propane, and you tell them that another supplier is 80 cents cheaper, they say, well, that's too bad. We're just going to sell it for our price. And I said, well, it says right in the phone book, you beat or meet any competitor's price. And their answer was, we'll go buy from them then.
Huh. So actually, Sandy, it sounds like, I mean, the topic is propane, but really what Barb is talking about is honoring what is said in advertising.
Right. And this propane situation over the winter really has gotten to be a complicated one, and we are conducting investigations of several companies. We've heard from hundreds and hundreds of consumers who thought they had a contract, had prepaid for propane, and the company said, well, we don't have any propane to deliver. So, and there are a number of reasons why this has occurred, the propane shortage part of it. But I guess my suggestion would be for Barb to file a complaint with us and send us, including a copy of the ad, so we can review it and look at the facts and apply our laws and see whether there are any violations of state law.
Mm-hmm. And just because people might not have gotten that number down before, and Barbara might not have it, Sandy, can you give the Consumer Protection Hotline?
Yeah, you can file a complaint online at datcp.wi.gov and just click the File a Complaint link. Or you can call our Consumer Hotline at 1-800-422-7128 and ask to have a complaint form mailed to you.
Great. Thanks for that call, Barb. Let's go next to Fred in New Berlin. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I'd like to add to the roofing warranty.
Sure.
I had a roof put on by, and the shingles were a reputable company. After about 8 years, the granules started to come off quite a bit, so I went back to my roofer, and we pulled off two sheets and sent them into the company because they were defective, the roof, the granules. So what happened was I had a hard time getting any relief for it. I finally had to hire a lawyer, and then they started to listen. But I would add that if you have a roof put on, save all the wrappings because it tells the lot and everything. And that's what I did because a friend of mine that's a roofer told me to do that, which helped me get relief on the roof. Also, their warranty, there's also state warranty, can conflict with what the state says about warranties. So you're really dealing with two things.
Wow, that's great advice, Fred. Michelle?
That is excellent advice, Fred, too. You know, if you're not going to save the actual wrapping, take a picture of it and save the picture. Something where you're going to make sure you have all that very detailed information to follow up should you ever need to cash in on a warranty or follow up with the manufacturer of a product. So excellent tip.
That, great advice, Fred, and glad that even if it took a little longer that you were able to get some relief there. Monica in Green Bay is next. Hi, Monica.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering, do the cable company supposed to knock at your door? The guy offered me internet or phone, and I told him I had a bill, and he said he'll put it in someone else's name. So he left me his card. And, before they knocked at my door, and they said, well, we could put cable in your daughter's name. So I tried to report it to the cable company, and they called the police on me, so I ended up paying a ticket. But I was wondering, what should I do this time?
Sure. So Monica had a cable company, supposedly cable company, show up at her door, and sounds like trying to do some kind of shady arrangements. Michelle, what would you recommend Monica do?
You know, I think that was great that she called the police. And if they come knocking again, you call the police. Anyone who comes door to door, you should always ask for credentials to see that they're with the company that they say they are. Ask to see your local ordinance that they've registered with your municipality to be going door to door in your area. Traveling sales crews, as we call them, you know, that they have photo IDs and are who they are, and don't let them in your house. So, and especially if they start saying they're going to put bills and other things in other people's names,
yeah,
that gets you in trouble as much as it gets them in trouble. So just walk away from
and
that.
And it just shows that they are not very ethical people, and so you probably don't want to be entering into any kind of business arrangement with them. So, yeah, Monica, it sounds like you did the right thing and making sure that it's reported is important. Actually, Amy on email similarly said, I agree with the guests. When people call or come to my door asking for money, I always cut them off by clearly stating that I do not give money over the phone or at my door and ask them to give me something in writing or a website. I tell them that I am firm about that. I am polite but firm and just keep repeating that. And that seems like good advice as well.
Right. And don't feel bad about just hanging up, you know, if that's the only way you can end the phone call.
And so number 7 on the list is gas pump accuracy. How do we know if a gas pump is not accurate?
This is another one that you would not have seen on the top 10 list 5 or 10 years ago. But as gas prices have gone up, consumers are being very good watchdogs and letting us know when they think that they're not getting what they pay for. Hmm. You know, especially gas was up around $4 a gallon through most of 2013. So we do have a Bureau of Weights and Measures, and we have inspectors that go out and check things like gas pumps to make sure that they're delivering accurately.
And so is it an issue of the amount of gas it's saying is going into the car is not, or is it that the price is ringing up at a different level, or is it maybe either of those?
Well, both are both and. There's a measuring device in a gas pump, and when you pay for a gallon of gas, you should be getting a gallon mm-hmm. of gas with a very small level of tolerance. But I guess the good news for consumers is, in 2013, 99.5% of the time, gas pumps that we checked were either delivering accurately or actually over-delivering, so you got more than what you paid for. So that's consumers can have a good deal of confidence that they are getting what they pay for in Wisconsin compared to other states, especially.
Well, that's very good news. Well, we have a lot more to talk about with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. They are from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection here in Wisconsin. We are going through the top 10 list of consumer complaints for 2013 and also answering your questions and welcoming your comments at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. When we're trying to stretch our budgets a little further, it's understandable that we might find deals more irresistible than ever. But what happens when a bargain turns into a headache or even worse? It's important to know where to turn for help. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Judith.
And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Good to have you with us too, Michelle.
Yes, good to be here, Judith.
Well, we have several people on the line who want to join in, but first I want to make sure that we get to this, so let's take care of this right away. You have some great scam quick tips for avoiding a whole variety of scams. They're not they're not topic specific. They're really good in a bunch of situations. So let's go through those. Sandy, one of them is if you get a request for payment for someone.
Yeah, most fraud now comes either through a contact by phone or email. So never provide information unless you generate the phone call yourself. Mm-hmm. The amount of telephone generated fraud is just incredible, and it comes from everywhere in the world: Canada, the UK, Ghana, India, Jamaica, you know, it just goes on and on. And a lot of that telephone fraud specifically targets seniors. So again, no matter who they say they are, whether they say they're from the IRS or Medicare or Publishers Clearinghouse and you're the big winner, do not provide information over the phone unless you've initiated the phone call. The second one is, in response to the prevalence of email-generated fraud, do not click on an attachment or a link that comes to you in an email or a text. We've had numerous examples just over the last month or so where people receive emails that click, you're prompted to click a link to find out when your friend's memorial services are, or to view your utility bill. And when you click on that link, malicious software is downloaded onto your computer. So, you know, just be very, very aware that most fraud now comes through telephone calls or emails.
And in general, you know, we should never have to pay for something that we're supposed to be getting for free. So, Michelle, if they say, well, wire me this amount of money and I'll send you this, you know, voucher for a trip to Hawaii, thinking of Larry, we should never do that.
Right. If you're a winner, you're a winner, and there is no payment for that. I mean, if you've won. But that other quick tip is that wire money or debit card. That's as good as handing over cash. You won't see it again. We won't be able to track it. So anything, those phone calls, those emails that say wire me money, any transaction that's about that wiring, that's that other big red flag. Know that that is a scam. Mm-hmm.
Great advice for all of us. And let's go back to the phones. Barb in Black River Falls is up next. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I just returned from a trip last night, and on my way down to Arizona, my suitcase was severely damaged to the point where I couldn't use it. They broke off a wheel. And then I happened to be watching, I don't know if it was Dateline or 2020, and they had some video of how they're throwing the suitcases unnecessarily around. When I did receive a text from the airline, you know, how did we do, I did put that in there, but I haven't heard anything. Do I pursue this, or is, because I did buy a new suitcase. The wheel, I couldn't pull it. It was one of the back wheels, so I couldn't use it.
All right. Well, let's see what Michelle Reinen has to say. Michelle?
I would go about with the airline claims process for filing a claim with the damage. When I filled out those surveys, often it says somewhere in there that if you have an actionable item that you want attention and a response on, that they don't do that through the survey. You'd need to file through their regular claims or action process. So I'd go on their website and determine how you file a complaint or place a claim for a damaged bag, mm-hmm. and proceed there. If you get no result, then you can file a complaint and we could assist with that.
Great. Thanks for that call, Barb, and good luck with that. Let's go back to the phones and Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Hello, this Hi. Is Dave, and my story has to do with buying a car on eBay. I made a bid on the vehicle. It was about $3,000. It was picking the vehicle up in Pennsylvania, took a train out there. The lady picked me up at the train station, took me to her place. I looked at the car. The car looked nice. Started putting on the plates. We went in, did the transition, and there was cash that was given to her. I went out to the car. I started it. It was hard to start. Then I looked underneath, and the exhaust was leaking, and the tires were not inflated correctly. And she spoke somewhat English and Russian, and the person that was doing the help with her spoke Russian. So I felt a little bit, what am I getting into? And she said that they do 40 to 50 sales in eBay. Well, then I went in, and within 5 minutes I asked for my money back, and they wouldn't give me my money back. So I'm sitting here, and I'm a little bit concerned about my safety. So I get in the car. I go down to the gas station. There's no gas in the car. I push the button for the lever to open up the gas from the outside. That's not working. The window's not working, and so she sends in this person down there to help me do it mechanically to open it up. And this is at 5:00 at night, so I get on the interstate on my way back to Wisconsin from 40 miles east of Pennsylvania and drive all night. And the low beams are wrong; they're turned inside. That isn't safe. The engine light comes on; that isn't right. I get to the Wisconsin border and call the dealer and go right to the dealer and have the car checked. And I give this person a call, and I let them know what I'm doing and where I bought it from. I got the information back from the dealership, spent $250, and the car is just junk underneath. Mm. There's too much exhaust.
I'm just going to ask you to Dave, kind of tell us where it ended up. Where are you at right now with this?
Where am I at with the process? I sent information from the dealership back to this person. I asked for monies back, and they are not returning my call.
Okay, well, let's see what Sandy and Michelle have to say about that. Sandy?
A couple of suggestions. One might be to get in touch with the law enforcement in Pennsylvania in the city or county where you purchase this car. And second, if you would file a complaint with us, we could file up with eBay because it may be a seller that they don't want using their services.
So follow up in Pennsylvania, since that's where it happened, with law enforcement there, but also bring in the Wisconsin department as well.
Right, and we will communicate with eBay about it.
Okay, yeah, sorry for that, Dave. Sounds like a bad situation. And actually, number 8 on the top 10 consumer complaints for last year was motor vehicle sales. And is it what you hear about, is it a lot of times similar to what Dave talked about, like the car not being as advertised?
It's a variety of things. Maybe something goes wrong after you purchase the car. Those are all handled by the Department of Transportation. They have a motor vehicle unit. And in Wisconsin, if you sell more than 5 vehicles, if you're a person selling more than 5 vehicles, you need to be a registered dealer in the state. So we would send these kind of complaints over there as well so they can keep track on the number. But this took place in Pennsylvania,
right.
His experience did. So there's a difference there. And it's just a variety of things, maybe follow up on the warranty of a vehicle but anything that happens in that sales transaction process.
Mm-hmm. And number 9 is actually motor vehicle repair. So closely related, I'm guessing.
It is. But that is something that we regulate, the motor vehicle repair aspect. And that goes into the representations, estimates that should be given at the time you drop off the vehicle. Claims that something needs to be repaired when it may not be, kind of the scare tactic that could be used as far as safety of the vehicle, that those are regulated. And so we look at complaints of that nature, whether or not you receive your parts back when they are requested. Mm. A consumer has to request that. They have to sign off on auto repair shops going above an estimate, and they have to give an estimate line for when you drop off the vehicle.
Talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Well, we might as well finish out the top 10 since we've gotten through 1 through 9. Number 10 is contests and sweepstakes and prize promotions. Sandy, I actually said before the show that I was surprised that wasn't higher up on the list, but you pointed out that, again, this is what you get actual complaints on. I'm guessing a lot of people just kind of delete those and move on and don't necessarily file something if they haven't actually been the victim of it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we do have victims, and they typically lose a lot of money to the scam. A lot of elderly people are targeted, and we've talked about this on previous shows, but a lot of this kind of fraud originates in Jamaica, and there's a lot of organized crime surrounding it. But the typical pitch is you'll get a call out of the blue saying that you're the big winner, and all you have to do is get a prepaid debit card or wire me some money, those two red flags that Michelle just mentioned. And that will allow us to process your prize. And unfortunately, some people are very, very vulnerable to this scam. And those criminals in Jamaica and other places in the world know where we're vulnerable. And that's why they keep doing this particular scam. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones and Pam in Green Bay. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a home repair issue. About 2.5 years ago, I had extensive work done on my house. Everything seems to be okay, except I had an exterior storm door replaced. And this fall, I noticed that it was starting to kind of warp out at the bottom. Apparently, there's a foam core inside. And that foam core wasn't sealed in correctly, so it's starting to warp out, and the door needs to be replaced. I called the installer, and they said that they called the manufacturer for me because there was either a 10-year warranty or a lifetime warranty. I'm not sure which, but either would be covered, mm-hmm. should be covered in this. I got a call from the manufacturer saying they would replace the core, the inside core, for $30. And I called the installer back, and they said that they would put it together, and that would be about $72. So the total cost here would be about $102. Now, a new storm door of about that quality is about $160 at the store. So I'm wondering, is this legal? Is this something that's regularly done?
So this is something I think, that should be under a warranty, but they're saying you have to pay for it.
Yes.
Okay. Michelle?
Well, what we'd want you to do, it's hard to analyze over the radio. We'd want you to send in a copy of the warranty, if you have that, to see what the terms and conditions of the warranty, because it may be that they have the right to repair, replace, and then what parts of it is covered, just that they'll do the repair. So do they have to cover that the installer takes care of that for you, or is that they just supply you the materials to take care of it? It can get kind of complicated.
Could be something
so
in the fine
to,
print.
Yeah, we need to take a look at that. So I'd encourage you to file a complaint with us in order to help us determine if there is wrongdoing there.
So if Pam has a copy of that warranty, how should she submit it to you?
She can file a complaint online and scan it in and email it to us. Our online forms are at datcp.wi.gov. Otherwise, you can call our 800 number, 1-800-422-7128, and we can send out a complaint form.
All right. Thanks for that call, Pam. And we'll stay in Green Bay, but we'll talk with Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I received a prescription savings card from the National Prescription Savings Network, and I have used it, and I did get a discount. But I'm always concerned that somehow they're going to get connected with my credit card and that there could be a scam involved. Have you heard anything?
Sandy?
We've heard about a number of scams involving the medical discount cards, and usually they're represented as providing more benefits than they really do. I don't know whether you paid for this or received it free.
How did you get that?
I did not pay for it. I did not pay anything for it. That's what makes it so questionable, because I didn't certainly request it.
So it just showed up in the mail one day, Teresa?
Correct. Okay. And then I got another set come after the beginning of January. I got another set of cards.
All right.
And they said I could give it out to anyone in my family, and they would be able to use it in any of the most any drugstore.
All right. So what would you recommend, Sandy?
It would be unusual that your credit card information would go to the distributor of the discount card. But if you have any questions about it, you can call them and ask them, you know, how you're protected from that happening. And if you don't get a satisfactory answer, then stop using the card.
Well, and I wonder, too, if the pharmacy is accepting it, maybe they know something about it and maybe asking the next time you're picking up your prescriptions, you know, are you familiar with this?
Never hurts to ask, because they do see a lot of those different cards and know. And the other important thing, monitor that credit card bill. Just look at it, fine-tooth comb every single month to make sure there's no abnormal activity there or charges.
There was an email also on the medical topic, and I'm thinking that this is outside of your department, but maybe we can let people know where a complaint like this would go to. Tim and Michelle emailed, what is the recourse for a patient when an insurance card is presented to a medical facility for payment, it's accepted by this facility without comment, and only later does the patient discover that the facility was not a provider for the insurance, and now they're coming to them for payment. In their view, this constitutes fraud and misrepresentation by the facility. And I think I'm remembering that health insurance doesn't necessarily fall under you, but where would they go with that complaint?
I'm thinking to start with the Officer of Commissioner of Insurance.
Okay.
And again, you can always call us or file a complaint with us, and we'll make sure that your complaint gets to the appropriate agency, whoever has legal jurisdiction over the issue.
Okay, so even though it's not necessarily the purview of your office can send people in the right direction. And again, that's 800-422-7128. And another follow-up from earlier, Audrey asked about the free credit report agencies. And actually, I realized that we didn't talk about what those three agencies are. So it's, Michelle, it's Experian,
Equifax, and TransUnion.
Okay. But there's one gateway.
There is one gateway, annualcreditreport.com. That you can use to request those reports.
Or if you don't have internet access, you can call them at 1-877-322-8228.
877, and that's a toll-free number.
Right.
877-322-8228. That's for free credit reports if you're not able to do it online. Let's go next to Dave in Mayville. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
All right, I got a really good tip for you and all your NPR listeners about telemarketing calls or calls that you just do not want.
All right.
And you don't have to call the do not call list to get on every year. You can do this on your own and never be bothered again.
And what is that?
I bought a phone from Staples or a box store, and it has a block call feature on it.
And so what calls does it block?
Well, any call that you do not want to answer after the first time, after the phone number, after you pick up, you hit the call block feature, and it will block up to 500 or 1,000 call phone numbers.
All right. So basically, you get the call once, you say, this is a call I don't want to get again, and then the phone blocks it.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't been getting any repeat telemarketing phone calls. I haven't been getting any phone calls from anybody that I don't want to have anymore. I just hit that function, and it stores that number, and they will not call you again from that number. It'll ring a half a ring, and then it'll say on the screen, call block.
Okay.
You can go back and look to see what number it was if you're curious.
All right.
Or whatever.
Well, thanks for that tip, Dave. And Sandy, I'm guessing that the problem with that might be that they often use different phone numbers.
Well, right. I think almost every telephone carrier offers that feature where it's a star and then a couple of digits to block calls. One thing I might caution on, that's usually capped at a certain number, like 10 or 25, and beyond that, you have to pay a fee. So
if you're
that's
using that star,
right.
something.
But there are software solutions to this telemarketing problem in development as we speak. And one that we've talked about before on the show is called NomoRobo. And right now, it only works for voice over internet calling. So if you have that service, you can use it. Hopefully other solutions will be quick in coming, because it's like a plague on our economy right now.
Well, and such an annoyance for all of us at home. Well, as usual, so much great information from our guests and from our listeners today, talking about consumer protection. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection at the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. Sandy, thanks as always for spending
Judith.
Time. And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, always great to have you with us.
And always good to be here. Thanks, Judith.
And just a reminder that people can go online to the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. That's DATCP.WI.gov, and you can get information there. You can also file complaints. You can also do that by phone. That number is 800-422-7128. Again, 800-422-7128.